Hey guys, thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Worlds Collide. I'm your host, Victoria. And first, I wanted to say thank you for being a listener to this show. And if you are a regular listener to this show, I really appreciate you. I think I said that the last few times a bunch, but it's true. You'll really appreciate it. So coming to this episode, my guest is Amanda, and she moved from the US to Iceland, basically with her husband, but also more or less with her whole family. So yeah, we talk about life in Iceland and especially about the food, like good food and also really gross sounding food, strange food. Yeah. So she lives there for over a decade, and so we talk about her whole journey there and also raising a kid there. I don't want to take away too much, but here is the episode with Amanda. Enjoy. My guest today is Amanda. Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me on.
Of course. And where are you calling from?
I am calling from Iceland.
Oh, Iceland. And where in Iceland?
So I live in a little town called Selfoss. It is probably the largest town in the southern part of Iceland that is still close to the capital.
Ah, okay.
So we're about an hour drive south of Reykjavik, Iceland.
What brought you there?
So I was actually born in the US and my husband also, but his father was born in Iceland and moved to the US for college when he was young, like 18, 19. And about a year after I met my husband, just before we got married, his sister, because they're both dual citizens, having a father that's from Iceland, a mother from America. His sister moved here for college. And while his parents were here getting her settled, his dad got a job here. So it was kind of like a last minute, like, okay, so his sister moved, his dad moved, his mom came back to the to where we were living in Idaho and packed up all their stuff, sold everything, and moved a few months later. And then within a year, he's like, you know what? You like to travel, so do you want to try moving to Iceland? So we packed up and moved to Iceland. It happened, let's see, he moved in April of 2014, and I followed him in June after we took care of, after I took care of selling our cars and packing up our things
Oh, so you've been... You've been there a while already. Ten years.
10 years this year, yep.
Ah, okay. So was it like an easy decision for you to say like, hey, sure, no problem? Or
I mean, I know for a lot of people, moving from a place that they've always known to something, somewhere they've never been, is kind of a big leap. But I have always been very adventurous. And so for me, it was just another adventure waiting to happen. In like in 2010, I spent a summer in China, 4.5 months. And I basically went there by myself. And I worked as an English teacher for a program that an American family was trying out. They they wanted to have English, native English speakers come to China and teach their English class for the summer. To see if it helped the students with their English skills. And so when I decided to do that, I kind of, it was like a last minute decision and I decided. And then 3 months later, I was just in China. And so it wasn't all that different when we moved from America to Iceland, other than the fact that I knew I wouldn't be going back at the end of 3 months. But I don't know. I've always loved to travel. So it wasn't a huge thing for me. It was obviously a lot to get used to and totally different culture, but I liked how small everything felt here. Like, it's more like a family than like big bustling cities. And like I lived mainly in like Boise, Idaho, in America or in like around the Seattle area. And that's like the Boise area is around, what, 750,000 people. And Seattle area is like 4 million. The entire country of Iceland is 375,000.
Right.
And the town I live in is like 10,000 people, maybe.
Right. Way smaller.
Yeah. But I love it because it feels like I know so many people here and it feels like I belong here.
Nice. Okay.
And so it's actually not been as hard for me as I thought it might be when I first like landed at the airport and realized like, wow, this is permanent.
So was that the thought to be there forever? Or did you just say like, hey, maybe we'll just try it out for a year?
It was kind of, we kind of just decided to make it forever.
Even before? Like,
because we didn't own a house in America. We were renting. I owned the car and he owned a little pickup, but we couldn't take those with us here. Right. So everything else that we owned, we fit into like a 40-foot shipping container and just had it shipped here. And so once everything got here, we're just like, well, we're here now. And by 2018, we had actually saved enough money that we bought our first house.
Nice.
So, I mean, it was a very long 4 years, but it was very much worth it. And I don't know, because life is so much calmer here. We had a daughter 2 years after we moved here.
Oh, nice. Congratulations. And
thank you. Yeah.
She's already like 8.
Yeah, she turns 8 this summer. But no, it's just, I really like the pace of life here. And once I got used to it after the first few months of trying to figure things out and feeling very lost, it was better than I thought it would be. And I'm actually really happy here. And that's people ask me a lot, like, because we still haven't been back to the States to visit.
Oh, no?
No.
Oh, wow.
Well, his family is here. And
right. So you don't have a reason to visit his family? Sure.
No, no. And I mean, my family and I aren't the closest anyway. Okay. And it's just one of those things. I spent a lot of time from the time I turned like 17 years old. I was traveling on my own. I traveled to Mexico pretty much by myself. I went to China by myself. I like to travel. And so I have him. And in my mind, as long as he's happy here, I'm happy here. And within the first year or two, he was very happy. And I'm like, okay, then, you know, I'm good. That's just, that makes me happy.
And did the winters ever get to you?
Every like 3 or 4 years we'll have a really bad winter where we get a lot of snow. But like this year there's been a little bit of snow and next year there will be less snow. So it's like on a cycle of every 3 or 4 years you get like a lot of snow.
Okay.
And then it kind of calms down for a couple of years and then you'll get a lot of snow again. And so that doesn't bother me so much. And the only thing with the winters that I really don't like is the fact that it's, what is it, like -5 or 6 degrees Celsius in the winter. And then you have the wind blowing. And so it feels so much colder. But because it's, you know, the summertime, there's like 24 hours of sun. And then in the winter, you get like 3 hours maybe on the shortest day. We so you don't just spend a lot of time outside anyway.
Yes, you have to charge all your batteries in summer.
Yes, yes. And buy lots of tanning lotion in the winter.
Self-tanning.
Yep.
Yeah.
Every winter.
They don't look like a zombie or like a ghost.
I joke because my hair is always really dark and I've always had a tan. But living here, I'm much more pale. I'm like, I'm turning into Bella Swan. And like, I'm just looking more and more like a vampire the longer I live here. I need to put some tan like cream on so that I don't look just like a white person with this dark hair, you know?
Yeah. Well, if that helps, then cool. Do you speak the language?
I do. It took me about a year to understand the basics of the language. And then, so moving here from the US, I had to apply for a temporary residence card every year right. for the first 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then I was granted my permanent residence card. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I would never be leaving here. So 2 years ago, I applied for my citizenship, which yeah. I was granted this last summer.
Uh-huh, nice.
And to qualify for that, I had to go to an Icelandic equivalency test. So they tested how well I can read, how well I can understand, how well okay. I can speak. And I passed it. The woman giving me the test asked me a question about a picture. And she said, you know, like, just tell me what you see in the picture. Okay. And something in the picture made me laugh. And then I explained in Icelandic to her why it made me laugh. And uh-huh. she put all the pictures down and she's like, okay, you just explained your like way more than I expected you to. So you're uh-huh. fine. You're going to pass. No problem. But one of the things that has definitely helped me was I worked in a school for almost 2 years with first and second graders.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm.
So that definitely helped because this is not an easy language to learn, but, right. you know, takes time.
I mean, I have no idea even how it sounds. Can you say something like, hello, my name is Amanda?
Góðan, ég heiti Amanda, ég býr á Íslandi, ég frá Bandaríkjunum og ég á ein barn, hún heitir Lexi og ég á ein hvolp og ein kissu. Okay. So that's, hi, my name is Amanda, I live in Iceland, but I am originally from America. I have one daughter, her name is Lexi, I have also a dog and a cat.
Ah, okay, I heard Lexi, but I thought like you're gonna say my dog's name is Lexi.
No,
sorry. Do you have a strong accent? Because like for me, I don't hear any American accent.
Actually, because I spent the first 2 years learning Icelandic from an older gentleman that I was working with, uh-huh. I have been told that my Icelandic sounds more native than people expect of right. a foreigner. Okay. And I have actually had people surprised on the other side when I'm speaking, like I work in customer service in a car parts store and I will be speaking with a customer in Icelandic. And if a foreigner comes in, a foreign speaking, like English speaking customer, I'll switch mm-hmm. to English. Okay. And the Icelandic person this has happened many times where the Icelandic person I have just been talking with will look at me in absolute shock. Like, it's like oh, you're not Icelandic.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, well,
yeah.
But no, not originally. It's, you know, taken time. But yeah. No, they say my accent doesn't sound quite Icelandic, but the way that I use my words, I sound like someone that could be from like the northern part of Iceland. The accent there is uh-huh. a little bit less. And so I guess most people that hear me speaking Icelandic just assume I'm from somewhere like that. That's just right. kind of like
okay.
a country type accent as opposed to a city accent.
Okay. In the beginning when you came, did you start working at a school right away or...
No, I actually started the job that I started at. I was there for 5 years. I started out not having to speak to anyone in Icelandic because I was there to organize the store because the store mm-hmm. was a mess. And I had been a manager in a parts store in America for like 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I knew how to organize things, get things situated so that it would be okay. more convenient. Mm-hmm. So I was doing all of that, not really speaking to anyone. And then after, I want to say like a year or 2 years, they were like, well, you could start trying to speak Icelandic and working in the front with you know, the salesman if you would like. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, sure. So I tried and started picking up a little bit of Icelandic, mm-hmm. Like speaking. Because, of course, the computer programs that they use for their store are all in Icelandic. So I had right. to learn how to read right, it right. first. Mm-hmm. And I've always been pretty good at languages. So it didn't take me long to figure things out mm-hmm. so that I could at least speak a little bit.
Right.
And then the older gentleman that I worked with him for 5 years. He helped me a lot.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. In the beginning. So that was really good.
Yeah. Did your husband speak any Icelandic when you came?
No, and I speak more Icelandic than he does now.
Oh,
and, yeah.
Okay.
And he's Icelandic by birth, so
yeah.
Everybody jokes, like, are you sure your wife's not the Icelandic one by birth and you're the adopted one? Like, because I can have full conversations on almost any topic. I think okay. The only place that I still prefer to speak English is if I have to take my daughter to the doctor or something.
Right.
Just because okay. I want to, like, I want to be understood. I want to understand them completely because that's mm-hmm. kind of important. Mm-hmm. Don't make mistakes there.
And they speak English fine, usually, the people where you go to?
Yeah. So most of the doctors, because there is not a medical school in Iceland, most of them go study abroad. They go, some of them, to other Nordic countries to mm-hmm. study, but a lot of them go and study in, like, the UK. And so they have to speak English there. Sure. And so it's normally very common to find a doctor that will speak English. And right. if the doctor doesn't, he can call in a nurse that usually will.
Right. Okay. Okay. That makes sense then.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very easy, which makes it actually harder to learn Icelandic when you live in a country where everybody can speak English really well.
Yeah.
You're like, I want to learn this language. And they're like, I'll just speak to you in English. Like, no, yeah. no, please don't. Please don't.
Yeah, please don't. I know. That's like, but yeah. I want to try. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to get, like, comfortable in Iceland so that you felt at home?
I would say probably just within a year, honestly. Because my daughter was born right about the time where I had just been in Iceland about 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And I had a lot of people asking me, like, oh, are you sure you want to have her there? I'm like, if I wasn't sure of that, I wouldn't have gotten pregnant here,
because yeah, yeah,
she
yeah.
was kind of, like, planned, mm-hmm. but not planned.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, I have so many hobbies that never made sense for someone of my age, even when I was younger. Like, I've always loved sewing and crocheting and knitting.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, like, 14, 15, 16-year-old in America, everybody's looking at you like, why are you
right. knitting? Yeah, exactly.
Here, my daughter at almost 8 years old is learning how to crochet and to knit in school. It's just something that everybody uh-huh. does here. And so moving here, I'm like, oh, okay. I love horses. Everybody here loves horses.
Right.
Okay. I like to knit. I like to crochet. Everybody here does. It's very popular here for people to knit. They have these special woolen sweaters that they have that they mm-hmm. wear called Lopa Pesa.
Yeah.
So many people knit these here themselves. Uh-huh. You can go and you can buy them, of course, at like tourist stores and stuff. And sure. there's shops that sell them. But a lot of Icelandic people have someone in their family that just makes these for them.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And I wanted to learn how to do that. So I've been working on learning to do that, but it's a little bit trickier than I thought.
Yeah, but
I can make gloves and hats and scarves nice. Very nicely. Nice. So well, making progress. Hard.
I mean, I think it sounds very complicated too.
Yeah.
Like the sleeves the same length.
Well, and they do these intricate patterns on them. And like you can yeah. do just like a solid color and people, they're like, oh, that's beautiful. It's great. But then I've seen women that make like patterns where there's like horses running across.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen those too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're beautiful. And most of those are not written down patterns. They're just this lady sitting there knitting and she's like, I'm going to put a horse on this one. And she just like, while she's going, just puts a horse on it.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, no. I can do a lot of things. I can't picture that in far enough in advance to like make that, my horse would be lopsided.
But so you have like more things in common with the people in Iceland, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that makes it then feels more welcoming, not like, oh, look at
yeah
like weird. Yeah. Uh-huh. I understand.
It's much better. Like I said before, I just feel like life is also so much calmer here, even mm-hmm. when life gets crazy. Most of the time we don't work nights at work. We don't work weekends. Mm-hmm. Most things are closed. Uh-huh. For a while I was working in a grocery store. And I would have to work on the evenings or weekends, but that stopped. Like the stores close at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
So even working like the night shift, which is the dreaded shift, nobody wants to work it. You're still home by like 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, I just, the way of life here is so much calmer and more like family centered.
Mm-hmm.
And when I need to take a day off for my daughter being sick, I just, you know, tell my boss like, hey, my daughter's sick. I need to stay home. And it's mm-hmm. not a big deal. It's like, oh, you go take care of your little one. We got this covered. You
yeah.
just take care of your stuff. It's fine. Yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah.
Was there, though, anything in the beginning, like culturally, that you really had to get used to, or that you thought like, okay, this is like totally weird to me?
I think the only really big one for me would have be probably just some of the food that they eat.
Okay.
For certain holidays. Uh-huh. Yeah, and probably just some of the food that they eat. I mean, okay. There's holidays they eat rotten shark
mm-hmm.
and boiled sheep's head.
Oh, you know, I think so in Germany we have this TV show, and they at one point they had like they're introducing the most disgusting foods all over the world, and I think that mm-hmm. was part of it.
Yeah, the svid that usually makes it on there, the boiled sheep's head,
mm-hmm.
or you can buy fresh or pickled boiled sheep's testicles
mm-hmm.
certain times of the year, okay. and they're just like. They package them in this nice little styrofoam box and it's like, here you go.
And is it just like what they kind of eat for dinner or?
They're for specific meals. Mm-hmm. Like the svid, the sheep's head, you can buy it off and on throughout the year. There's a few different like holidays, I guess. They're not really holidays. They're like special days for Iceland that you would eat svid. Usually at like Christmas time, you would see little rotten shark chunks. They cut them into like tiny little cubes because you can't eat them bigger than that at one time. Mm. And then they serve them with something that which is called in English burning wine. It's brennevin. Okay. And it's like a barley wine, and it if someone like three houses away opens it, you can smell the wine.
You can smell it. Oh.
But it's, yeah. So you usually take a little bite of the shark and then drink this wine.
Did you try it right away? No. Have you ever tried it though?
The only time I was kind of brave enough to want to try it, I couldn't because I was pregnant.
Uh-huh.
Which is okay. The only reason I was kind of like, I want to try that. And they're like, that's the baby talking and you can't because it's a rotten shark and you're pregnant.
This sounds disgusting.
Yeah. I can't get past the smell. But I have tried svid. I cannot like eat it like they do, just take the head on my plate and eat it. But my father-in-law, the very kind man that he is, will take the meat off of it for me and put it on the plate, and then I can eat it. I just can't eat something that's looking at me from my plate.
Right. I mean, it's fair.
When it's staring at you, you're like, sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry. This might hurt. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I understand. I would not eat it either. I mean, I don't know. I would probably try it, like you said, like if somebody serves it, cuts it for me, I don't have the whole thing in my face.
There's something about it, though, especially because of how they boil the head. Because, of course, like they have to burn all the hair off the head, which smells horrid. The meat plant that does it for like the whole country is here in Selfoss. And they do it a certain time of the year, and you can smell it through the whole town.
Oh, I bet.
So there's like 2 or 3 days where we're walking around kind of holding our breath when we're outside because we're like, we don't want to smell that. But it's just part of life here now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about the way that they prepare it that the meat is very, like, the most tender meat I have ever had in my life.
I mean, that's probably why it is so big, right? Or why it's so popular. Because otherwise it would not make sense.
So the reason that they eat these things, though, the main holiday where they eat these all together is Thorablot, which is celebrated. We actually just celebrated it recently. It's like it marks the end of the harshest point of the winter. And it was something that the Vikings used to do. this is mm-hmm. what they would eat throughout the winter to get them through, because they didn't have the abundance of food everywhere. So they would fatten up their sheep and they would use every part of everything mm-hmm. through the whole winter, saving these things for last. And so this was like the celebratory dinner of, okay, the worst part of the winter is behind us. We can eat the sheep's head and the sheep's testicles and all of this stuff in celebration of spring is coming. We're going to be able to, you know, plant our crops and do what we need to do.
Okay, so it's coming up for you too.
But I believe it just passed a couple of weeks ago, if I remember correctly.
If you remember the smell.
Yeah. but yeah, then they have things like Slautish, which is like blood sausage that you can buy all year round. And then they have something they call Svid Sulta, which is like the sheep's head jam. So if you want to try sheep's head, but you don't want to look at it, you could try that, because it's just sold in like little kind of like jelly bricks, and you can just cut it and put it on toast.
we have that in Germany too. It's called similar word. It's called Sulze.
Yeah.
And it's like aspik. I don't know what. I don't know if that's the same word in English. It's like a. Yeah. It's like almost like jello kind of.
Yeah. It's kind of similar to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law grew up eating a lot of German food, and so I'm very familiar with like she makes this, she calls it aspik in English.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh, it's great." No, I don't eat it. My husband doesn't eat it. His sister doesn't eat it.
I don't eat it either.
You're crazy. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Oh, it's so great." So she likes the Sveðasulta, the sheep's head jam.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, I think I've never tried it. But everybody says it tastes good. But okay, I believe you, but I still don't want to try it. It just does not look very appetizing.
And like I said, I think in the right setting, if everybody's eating it and you're like, okay, well, you know, everybody's doing it. So if I eat it and I don't like it, it's like, whatever. But I try not to eat the things that I'm not fond of anyway. I do like they do smoked lamb and hangukyut. It's like hanging dried meat, and it's like the leg of the lamb, and they dry it, and it's really good. I'm finally now getting to the point where I can eat it because the smoke they use on it is really strong. So it's taken me a while, but I like that. They also do a lot of herring, like pickled herring in different like sauces, mustard sauce and all this. I like that. And they do it on this rye bread that they make in like pits of boiling water, like blanking on the English word.
Like the kettle?
Like geothermal water.
Okay.
Like just holes in the ground.
Ah, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so like you have like, and it's this really thick, dark black rye bread, and it's really, really like dense and sweet. And then you put this pickled herring on there, and it's really good. I love that. Mm-hmm. I have that. That's something they serve every Christmas when you go to like a Christmas buffet, then they have it there. And
they have like all different kinds of herrings, like different kinds.
Yeah. So they have like a plain one. And then they have one that's like in like sinup sauce, which is like a mustard sauce. Mm-hmm. And they have one in a dill sauce. And they have one. It's like a beet sauce. So it's kind of like this pinkish colored sauce. And that's my favorite. But they only have that one at Christmas.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah. We went to Denmark last summer. Mm-hmm. And we also went to like a restaurant where they had like a herring buffet. So we tried all of them too. I liked it too, but I also, to me, this is nothing weird because we eat this in Germany as well.
Yeah. My uncle actually lives in Germany. I visited him when I was very young for a few weeks, and I got to experience some of this stuff. So I think the things that I like here are similar to what they have in Germany. And that's maybe why I was comfortable eating it here.
Yeah, you heard of it before.
I mean, I spent 4.5 months in China watching people eat bugs and chicken's feet. I think I can get past watching people eat these other things.
Right. And is there anything that you really like?
I think Iceland is by far one of the most beautiful places I have ever been in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And even being here 10 years, I can still like just be driving to Reykjavik and the sun comes up just a certain way over a hill on a certain day. And it just is breathtakingly beautiful.
Uh-huh.
I love that even if you are going, like if you're staying in Reykjavik, if you're going to just visit, it doesn't take you long to get away from the city and you just feel like it's just you and nature everywhere. And it's great. I love it. And Iceland as a whole feels so much more like a community. Like the whole country is one big community as opposed to like an actual like country of individuals. Because like I know recently in the news, people have been seeing all about the volcanic eruption in Grindavík. And people being displaced from their homes and all of this. And when that happened, because it was such short notice when the first eruption happened and the homes were being swallowed by lava, a few of them, these people had nowhere to go home. And Icelandic people just like started an entire like Facebook community for these people saying like, hey, I have a house here. It will house this many people. You can bring pets. You can bring this. All you just show up and it's yours for as long as you need it. And none of these people from Grindavík had to worry about where they were going to sleep at night, what they were going to eat, if they had anything to wear, where their kids were going to go to school. It was all taken care of. Companies made positions in their like other branches of them. Like, there was a bunch of people that were going to be out of work and they were just like, okay, you know what? We're just going to take you and put you into this company that you can continue to work. And it just like the heart of Iceland is so big when these things happen and it's just amazing to see. And I love being able to be here and like, I'm part of Iceland, but at the same time, because I wasn't born here, getting to watch this happen, it's just, it's amazing to me and I really love it. It makes me feel so much better about living here, you know?
It's beautiful. I mean, despite the fact the volcanic eruption, I mean, that's really bad, but it's really nice how the people reacted.
Yeah. And having, of course, this, and it's an ongoing thing. It's been erupting like for a few days, once a month, every month for the last like 3 or 4 months now. And so far it has destroyed a few homes in the town of Grindavík. It has completely blocked off the road so that they can't get back to the town. The most recent eruption there, the lava flowed over the top of like the water and the power pipes coming from a power plant that's near there. And it cut off all of the hot water to like Keflavík Airport and the Reykjanes Peninsula where Keflavík is.
That sounds scary.
Yeah, but Icelandic people just have this capability of just looking at a situation going, okay, this is bad, but we can fix it. And they just put their minds together and they fix it. They started trucking tanks of hot water to the Reykjanes Peninsula for so that people still had hot water to heat their homes and to have water like for showers and, you know, stuff. And they're building and they were going to try to divert the water, and I believe they should have it finished by now. They were going to divert the water, build a whole new pipeline from the power plant. And it was just like, it happened basically overnight, and they just took care of all of this. And it was just like, nope, this is broken. We have to fix it now. And they just did. And yeah.
And is it like the whole town is affected by this? Or I mean, like what they need to evacuate people? Like
Grindavík, the whole town was completely evacuated when the first eruption happened in December. There were violent earthquakes that we felt even here. We're more than an hour away from this place, and we felt the earthquakes even here. It was shaking us, like it woke us up. There was an entire night just before the first major eruption that we were just sitting up because, you know, every few minutes there was a massive earthquake. My mother-in-law could see the volcanic eruption happening in the distance from her back porch. And
it's like in a horror movie.
Yeah, a little bit, but it's just another day for us here in Iceland. Like, you know, okay, there's an eruption happening. Life goes on. Help these people out and, you know, go about your business. And it's just so, there's a saying in Iceland, "Þetta rættist." It's just like, okay, move on. Like, it takes care of itself. It's fine. And
So don't worry about it too much.
It's no stress. It's fine. It's fine. And they So they evacuated the whole town. And within 24 hours, everyone that got evacuated, like a couple thousand people, they all had places to stay. Their kids were put into schools, like space was made for the kids in schools so that everybody could just go about their lives like normal, as normal as possible.
Okay. Do they know how much longer it's going on for?
This kind of eruption, this is the same volcanic activity that's been going on since COVID started in 2019. Okay. So it's just kind of like ramping up. Mm. They're saying this probably will continue for the next few years.
Okay. Right, so deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So okay. It's like, we're going to make the best of this, and just people that lived there, I'm so sorry, but you know, you have to move on. And I feel bad. There was an older gentleman who was living in this town, who had been, when he was a boy, living on the island of Vestmannaeyjar, the Westman Islands, and a volcanic eruption happened then that made everybody flee the island and relocate to Reykjavik like 20, 30 years ago. And so he escaped that as a young boy, watching his home then go up in flames because of a volcanic eruption. And now he was living in Grindavik, and the same thing happened again.
Yeah.
And I feel terrible because, like, twice in his lifetime, he's watched his home being taken from him by a volcano. And his attitude about the whole thing is, well, that's life. You just, you know, take what you can from it and move on. Yeah. I'm like, I like that. You know, that's a good
attitude. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you live in Iceland, you can't really, you know, have any other kind of attitude towards the weather.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just part of it.
You're living nature.
Yeah. I mean, Iceland is one massive volcanic eruption waiting to happen. Uh-huh. But, you know, we all live here anyway.
That's true.
You know.
Yes. So are there like a lot of people from abroad in Iceland?
There are small communities of people. I think a lot of foreigners live mostly in Reykjavik. We have a decent amount of them that live here in Selfoss as well, maybe 1,000 or 2,000 here in Selfoss. But I would say it's mostly in the bigger towns. Like, you get them in Reykjavik, obviously, because that's the capital. Selfoss has a few. I believe there's some in Akureyri, which is like the biggest town in the north. But I don't know. Foreigners tend to stick kind of towards where English is spoken the most.
Right, right. So they stay in the cities.
Yeah, because once you get past, like once you drive from Reykjavik to Selfoss, you can go drive down to a place in the south called Vík. It's at like the southernmost tip of Iceland. There's not really much that's there. It's kind of just there's a couple of small restaurants and some gas stations and stuff, just simple, basic little. It's a small town, but it's most popular for its black sand beaches that are very near there.
I heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of people go there for that. But once you get past that, Iceland becomes much more wild, if I could use that word, I think. It's still very much like the country that I can imagine it was in the beginning.
Okay.
Even the roads there, in Iceland, most, you can drive the whole country on a single road. We call it the Ring Road, Highway 1. It goes around the whole country of Iceland, so you can see the whole country. In the east, on this road, it is still such a small like portion of people going there that most of the bridges that you have to cross rivers, which there's a lot of them there, they're one-lane bridges. And there's never been a need to upgrade them. So you have like every few miles or kilometers, you have to go across this one-lane bridge and then another one and then another one.
Okay.
And there's no reason to upgrade it because not a lot of people are out there anyway. Right. It's mostly just farmers and fishermen and, you know, Icelandic people living their life.
I have also another question. How did you make friends?
In the very beginning, most of my friends were made through the place that I worked because I was working for a company, me and my husband both. He was working in the mechanic shop and I was working in the spare parts for a company that imported American cars.
Ah, okay.
And so it made sense for two English-speaking people to work there because we knew what we needed to do for this kind of stuff. And that's why we got the jobs there. And I actually met a lot of my first group of friends through there. And the job that I have now is because of that job, because I met so many people. Mm-hmm. And then I worked for a short time in a grocery store, which I did not enjoy. So I moved from that to a school. I wanted to learn more Icelandic, and I made a lot of friends there. But I don't feel like I am a very social person.
Right.
But I seem to have a lot of friends because people like to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I'm not starting the conversation, sometimes they just, like, I have a lot of friends that we're friends because they approached me and said something, and I was just friendly and polite. Uh-huh. And I don't like being rude to people. So if somebody approaches me, of course, I'm just going to be friendly and polite and nice. And then if it goes somewhere, great. And if it doesn't, then I'm like, okay, so that didn't go anywhere, but it doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people in Iceland appreciate having someone who is willing to understand them if they decide to speak English, as opposed to talking to someone who's like, oh, your English is terrible. Like,
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, and it's also one of the reasons my Icelandic has gotten so good, because I have so many Icelandic friends and I tell them, like, look, I'm helping you with your English. You can help me with my Icelandic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a good trade-off. And most of my friends here are Icelandic. I have a handful of friends that are from other places, like all around Europe and stuff. But most of my friends here are actually just Icelandic people that I've met through different things, knitting groups and stuff. So I'm like, whole group of friends there.
I mean, here it sounds like all your friends are like grandmas, but I'm sure like they're a lot younger.
Some of the people, there's a couple of older ladies in this group that I'm in, but because it's a group on Facebook that I'm part of, a lot of them are anywhere between like 19 years old and like 19 to 40 is the biggest group.
Okay.
So like, not old people.
But also I feel like knitting in general just became a big trend in the last few years. Do you know when they like always put knitted scarves around a lamppost or something like that, or around a tree?
Here in Iceland, it's always been very popular, though.
It's
always been something they've taught in school. And so, like I said, when I moved here in 2014, it wasn't really popular anywhere that I had been before. Like I said, I had been to Germany and I had been to China and Canada and Mexico and, you know, lots of places. And I had never experienced a place, because I was invited to this like knitting group just after like a year of being here. And this group was already huge then.
Okay.
And it was a lot of people my own age. And I thought, well, this is crazy. It's not like, this is not like my grandmother's knitting circle. Uh-huh. This is like,
that's nice.
People my age I can actually talk with, and we have things in common.
Yeah.
And it was just really nice.
I also had learned knitting in school.
Okay.
So I thought they do it here maybe as well. I mean, I will experience it. My daughter's in first grade, so who knows? Maybe. Maybe not. Do you speak English at home with your daughter?
So because my daughter is growing up bilingual, because she speaks both English and Icelandic fluently, even at 7 years old, she translates for herself.
Okay.
When she first started speaking in the kindergarten, the language teacher that every kindergarten has like a language teacher to help the kids that are growing up in households that do not speak Icelandic to, everybody learns the same Icelandic. They all learn it properly and correctly. Mm-hmm. She said, if you have a native Icelandic speaking like parent or grandparent, they can speak Icelandic to the child. But if your native language is not Icelandic, you need to speak in your native language.
Yes.
So the child, while they're young, can learn it.
Right.
So until she started first grade, we only spoke English with her at home.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time she started first grade, almost 2 years ago now, she spoke so much of both English and Icelandic, I can actually ask her, like if she would say something in Icelandic, I could ask her, what is the English translation of that? And she would tell me what she meant in English.
Yeah.
So I, so I have actually started speaking to her, like myself, in Icelandic at home sometimes. Mm-hmm. And she's always amazed, like, Mom, you speak so much Icelandic. I know, I do. And her big joke now is, well, if you speak Icelandic and I speak Icelandic, we need to teach my papi, her dad, Icelandic.
Okay.
He understands it and he can speak it, but he's not as good with languages as I've always seemed
okay.
to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit harder for him.
And does he have to speak Icelandic at his work? Or is it not as needed as in your job?
Well, the job that he has now, he does have to speak Icelandic a little bit. And so he is learning more. Mm-hmm. But up until recently, his work was, he was just working on his own in like a shop or something. Okay. So it wasn't, he never dealt with customers or anything. Now he works for a shipping company and he delivers things to customers all over the place. So he drives a big truck and takes them like pallets of things. And so he has to like ask him like, where do you need this? Mm-hmm. Is there anything I need to pick up? So he is having to speak more now.
Yeah. So then probably you will pick up more.
Oh yeah. And he's actually a lot better at it than he thinks he is. He likes to say like, oh, my Icelandic, it's not great, but he speaks really good Icelandic. He has a good Icelandic accent.
Okay.
He's just a little bit more shy, I think, than anything to speak it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people are shy and then they're actually not as bad as they think they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he always says, it feels weird to speak Icelandic when I'm at home with you because we've always spoken English.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm like, yeah. But that's why I talk to our daughter that way, because she speaks Icelandic in school every day. And I was speaking Icelandic when I was working in the school with other kids. So for me, it's just kind of easy to transition from like English to Icelandic and, you know, keep the conversation flowing with her that way is no big deal.
Yeah. And also, or do you want to introduce your podcast?
Would be great. Okay. So my husband and I just last summer actually started a podcast with another friend of ours. So my husband Tyler and I and our friend James, who is originally from Scotland, decided we should start a podcast talking about what it's like being foreigners having moved to Iceland. And of course we discuss that and we talk about Iceland, and it's an all around comedy podcast that is not limited to our life in Iceland. We have talked about everything from serious injuries that happened because we had really stupid moments to lots of drinking stories and really dumb things that happened to that. And it's basically, if anything bad happens in our life, is it really bad or is it just funny from a different angle? And the tagline for our podcast is who really likes normal? So If you're tired of normal and you want to check something out, our podcast is The Good, the Bad, the Brain Dead. It's available on Spotify and Amazon and YouTube. Head over and check it out. We also have a Facebook page for it. So, yeah, we've been doing it just over 7 months now? Mm-hmm. And we're having a blast with it and always happy to have somebody come and listen and leave comments and let us know what they think as well.
Yeah, and you're also on Instagram, right?
Yes, we are also on Instagram, and I believe we have a Twitter account, although I can't remember if it's actually active or not,
because Twitter is weird. Well, it's called X now anyway.
Yeah, that right there why I'm not sure if we still have it or not. Like, I think we do, but I'm not sure.
Okay, but yeah, definitely anybody check it out to hear more about also life in Iceland and comedy.
Have
a nice laugh.
Oh yeah, lots of laughs. Yeah, and I will give a small warning of we do not recommend you eat while listening to our podcast, as you may choke. please do not listen with children in the room, because none of our content is child friendly.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah. It's good adult fun, and I think as a parent, there's other people out there that can completely appreciate needing to vent and blow off some steam without little ears listening in.
Right. So exactly.
That's what our podcast provides a little bit of.
And I also wanted to ask you, or rewind. So if anybody moves to Iceland, what could you recommend to them?
It depends on where they're moving from and where they're moving to in Iceland. But if you're looking at moving to Iceland, I would say the first thing that you should do is find the Directorate of Immigration's website, because all of the information that you need to know about what it takes to move to Iceland, anything that you might need to find, how to get a kennetala, which is your national ID number in Iceland, so that you can work, any of these things, you will find the information there. And unfortunately, not enough people know that that's where they need to look.
Okay.
That is like a major step in the right direction if you're looking at moving to Iceland.
Okay, very helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be the number one thing. Mm-hmm. Just, check that out. And then you find pretty much every answer to any question that you could possibly have when it comes to moving.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Because I think like a lot of people who listen to this podcast, they are also thinking of moving to places. Because it's always like, when I check out where the audience is, it's like all over the world.
Yeah.
You know? And then like a lot of times it's like, oh, this episode and especially. So I'm like, okay, maybe they're interested in moving there or something.
Yeah. I will say that moving to Iceland, be prepared for things to be very, very, very expensive, because it's, of course, disconnected from the rest of Europe. So everything is imported, and there are a lot of fees and taxes. So life in Iceland is very expensive.
Okay, that's also good to know.
Be prepared for that. It's not cheap by any means, but in my mind, it's worth it.
Uh-huh.
Because living in Iceland provides you with a life that you're not going to find anywhere else in the world. And being part of a community that is Iceland is just something that you won't experience anywhere else in the world. Not like this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so unique.
Nice. I guess you would not want to move back at one point.
No, I'm actually really happy with our life here. And honestly, at this point, it would be almost too expensive for us to try to move back to America. Because, of course, now we have a house and we have cars and we have our daughter and pets and everything, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, when we moved here, it was basically just my husband and I in our suitcase.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So now you have a life established.
Yeah. And now that we do have this, you know, beautiful life we've built, I'm just happy here. And someday we might go for a visit, but I don't know. Since we had our daughter, I've kind of decided having a child is a whole nother adventure that's much more exciting than traveling anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keeps me busy.
Also, for me, it's also like having a children. It's also so much more expensive to travel because you have extra plane tickets.
The plane tickets, and you have to get a bigger car, and you have to get the, you know, bigger hotel room or book.
Yeah.
We like to get like... we'll go on Airbnb and like rent a whole house.
Same, because it makes more sense.
And then you have to think about all the extra food, because like when I travel, I eat very light because I like to go and see things and do things. When my daughter travels, she's like, ooh, new place, new food. I want to eat everything.
You're right, right.
Mm-hmm. And she's like a tiny garbage can. Like you can put as much in there and it just never stops.
Yeah.
She's just constantly eating. And yeah, so kids are expensive. Traveling with kids is even more expensive.
Yep. 100%.
So, yeah.
And they want to go to places where you have to pay for extra entrance.
Yeah.
You know, go to this amusement park. And can we go to this park?
Yep. Every time. Uh-huh. She's been asking now, like, I want to go to Denmark. And I said, okay, well, what do you want to see in Denmark? And she's like, well, I want to go here and I want to go here and I want to go. I'm like looking at the prices, like, you do realize it's going to cost more to go to those few places than just your plane ticket to get to Denmark,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, really? Well, I don't have to pay for it, so that's okay.
Somebody has to.
Yeah.
Well, that was really nice to hear. Think we're coming to an end?
Okay.
Thank you for being on my podcast. Thank you for taking the time and explaining me your life in Iceland and what brought you there.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Yes, thank you. I thought that too. That was Amanda's story, everyone. A life in Iceland with volcanic eruptions and learning the language, having an Icelandic family. Sounds really nice, actually. So maybe if you were curious about moving to Iceland, I think maybe that was a good example. Well, in that case, you should also check out her podcast then. It's called The Good, The Bad, and The Brain Dead. And it's available on YouTube, Amazon, and Spotify. Talking about YouTube, this podcast is also available now on YouTube. That's pretty new, I guess. So yeah, you can check it out there as well. And as always, if you like this podcast, then please leave it a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts, or reach out to me at worldscollide123pod@gmail.com if you want to be a guest on the show, or leave me another message or a comment. Then we're also on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, where it's always worldscollidepod. Yeah, check us out there. Okay. I think that was it from me for this week. And until then, I hope I will see you next week. Bye!